say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be. You need another chance.
Hello everyone and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo and oh man, do we have another great show. I'm telling you what, if you've ever thought, oh, I feel like I'm a little burned out. Guess what? You can be burnout proof. How do I know that? Because you know who's with me today? Michael Levitt. Oh, man. This book is 60 some odd pages of, I'm just going to get right to the point and tell you how, what's going on and how to deal with it. That's what this book is. This is, I'm going to get right to the point book. This isn't one of those, I'm going to flower it and fluff it up with a lot of other stuff. Nope. This is, I'm making my point. And if you read it, I'm going to help you immediately. That's what this book is, Burnout Proof. It is absolutely awesome. I'll tell you what, I have taken so many notes. I probably should have just taken notes on the entire book and I would have had about 60 pages of notes and we could just cover it page by page with Michael, but I didn't do that. I actually took and cut it down a little bit, but we're going to be with him. Listen, folks, do yourself a favor, do your friends a favor, do your enemies a favor. Get on the line, text them, social media them, call them, whatever you have to do, tell them to tune into the show. I don't care if it's live, I don't care if it's later in a podcast, or if you're listening to me across this great country on AM/FM 24/7, coast to coast, tell folks to tune in, because this show is going to help you to not only avoid burnout, but to also help maybe be aware of people around you who are going through burnout. It's going to be that kind of show. And Michael's an expert in this area. His story is powerful and you're going to love him to death. But before we do that, let's do what we do every week, right? We go over the four areas of your life. We are four-part people. We're physical, mental, emotional, spiritual people. Michael actually discusses that when it comes to burnout, all four of your areas are affected, by the way. And this is the reason why we cover these four areas week after week after week, because you need to be in constant training in order to work on yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. You need to be doing it daily, right? We've talked to the Special Operations Forces guys on the show. They talk about it regularly, about you have got to be in constant training. You have to work on yourself every day in these four areas. And so let's talk about what that looks like. Well, first of all, we use a rating scale of 1 to 10. 1 being my training's not going real well. 10 is, man, I am outstanding, right? Now, whatever your number is, that's not what's important. What's important is that's your starting place, and then we're going to build on ourselves from there, right? So let's start with physically, right? Well, what do I mean? So if you were to rate yourself like, for instance, exercise, eating right, getting enough sleep, drinking enough water, if you were to put those all together and you were to rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 5 being average, how would you rate yourself in those and putting those together, right? That's your number. So if you said your number was a 3, okay, it's a 3, right? I don't want you to get from a 3 to a 10, but let's try to get to a 3 to a 4, right? So what might you do? Well, you may say, well, my exercise is really what's lacking. Well, you know what? Maybe you need to take a little bit longer walk. Maybe get a walk in. And by the way, as Michael talks about in his book, listen, if you're not working out, you know, start with 10 minutes a day. All right. Don't, the big mistake that we make physically when it comes to exercise is that we sometimes just jump right in and we do 2 hours and then we're so sore we can't go back for a week. No. Michael makes it really, really clear. If you haven't been doing it, start slow, right? But do something, right? That's the point. Same thing is true of all this eating right, right? You can't go all wholesale on eating right, right? If you've been eating badly, you're going to have to make those changes slowly over time. And Michael talks about creating habits and routines in his book, Burnout, right, to help avoid it. And one of the things that you can do is by doing these things slowly, all right? Same thing about drinking water. You know, use water to replace other things that you're drinking, right? Because that will help you, right? Getting enough sleep, right? Maybe start going to bed a little bit earlier. If you're a late owl, start cutting it back a little bit. Those are the type of things that you need to do to create a higher number. Moving on. Okay, that's your first number. Second number is your mental number. Right, we have two halves of the brain, right brain, left brain. Right brain is the creative feeling side. The left brain is the logical numbers side, right? We need to be doing things actively in our lives to be able to exercise both halves of those brains. Our brains, that is, reading a book is really great for that. But there's other things you can do too. learning a new instrument, learning a foreign language, you know, taking notes on an Audible book, not just listening to an Audible book, but actually writing down notes from an Audible book so that you're being an active participant in your learning, right? So if you were to rate your skill on your mentally, how would you rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10? All right, that's your second number. Third number is the emotional number, right? When you hear people talk about emotional quotients and emotional intelligence, we're going to just simplify it down to two things. One is, how well are you able to control your emotions under stress and pressure? And then two, how well are you able to tap into and understand the emotions of other people? And if you put those two together and you were to evaluate yourself honestly, what number would you give yourself emotionally? Right? That's it. And then finally, there's the spiritual number, right? And spiritual is, if you remove the physical, mental, emotional, it's what you have left, right? We all believe in something. We all have faith in something. We, regardless of what it is, some people it's God, and some people, you know, we run to something whenever we're in trouble, in beliefs and in hopes that that's going to help us, right? That's what we put our faith in, right? So you have to ask yourself a question. How's it working? Is it helping you get back to center? Is it helping you to have a sense of peace in the midst of chaos? Right? Is it working for you? So what, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate that? Right? So you have four numbers. Those four numbers are like the legs of a chair. If the legs of the chair are uneven, right? Right? Each number is like a leg. Right? What happens? You sit in the chair, your posture gets bad, and you get sore. You don't function well. Same token, if all the legs of the chair are too low, you know what? You cannot eat from a healthy table, right? Well, speaking of somebody who's got his legs all going up, same direction, he's healthy. His name is Michael Levitt, and he is the founder and chief of and burnout officer of the Breakfast Leadership Network, a San Diego and Toronto-based burnout media firm. He is an in-person and certified virtual speaker and is one of the world's leading authorities in burnout recovery and prevention. He is a Fortune 500 consultant, number one best-selling author, and host of the Breakfast Leadership Show, a top 200 podcast on iTunes. He is a two-time top 20 global thought leader on culture with Thinkers 360. Michael is a former healthcare executive, CIO, and CFO, overseeing $2 billion budgets. He has fully experienced burnout, and his powerful story has opened the eyes of thousands of people around the world on how to recognize and avoid and triumph over burnout. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show and welcome to A New Direction, Michael Levitt. Welcome, Michael.
Great to be with you, Jay. Looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, listen, the book's outstanding, Burnout Proof. I love what you did with the upside down R, the reverse R. I love what you did there. And then How to Establish Boundaries to Avoid Negativity or Stress. The book is fantastic. I want to dig right in, but I want to start maybe a little bit differently than what we might typically start with this book. I want to start with your story because I think your story of burnout is similar to a lot of stories. And I think people need to hear your story right away about what was happening when you experienced burnout and how you, it was a tragedy for you. So would you mind doing that? Starting us with that way?
Of course, of course. Let's go back in time to 2007. Hired as a healthcare executive just outside of Windsor, Ontario. My former wife is Canadian. I grew up in the Detroit area, but we immigrated to Canada in 2004 and was able to take on this role as a healthcare executive in 2007, which was really great because it was literally 5 minutes from my house. My commute time went from an hour each way to 10 minutes round trip, which was absolutely amazing. This role was great for me in the beginning because I had to learn a lot. I'd never worked in healthcare before. Now, I had a lot of startup experience, but no healthcare. I didn't know what an autoclave was or how to recruit physicians or hire staff or educate the community why our clinic was better than the existing clinics in town. But I had to learn that, and I did. But what that required was a lot of time to the point where for two solid years, I was pretty much working from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. 7 days a week, and that took a toll on me. I wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't getting any exercise to speak of. My nutrition plan, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for most days, was ordering into a microphone, driving around the corner, paying for the food, and getting handed a brown bag. You can probably figure out what kind of food I was eating. And going back to the exercise and the activity, our clinic was rather small, so I wasn't getting in a lot of walking to speak of. And of course, when you're the executive, you get the good parking spot. So you're even closer to the building than most people. So I wasn't getting in any activity at all. And one of the things that should have been the biggest red flag for me was, at the time, I was a mini season ticket holder for the Detroit Tigers. And this was back when they were going to the World Series a lot and were really, really good. And with being a season ticket holder, your tickets are paid for, your parking's paid for, your beer vouchers are paid for, your food vouchers are paid for. You just have to show up. You don't even have to grab your wallet. You literally just show up, hand vouchers and tickets. You're there. And I quit going to the games because I was so fatigued and wiped out and burned out with all of those hours. I quit going. And that should have been a warning sign for me, but I ignored it. And I kept going at that pace. And then finally, in May of 2009, I had what I like to refer to as my year of worst case scenarios. So from a period of May 2009 to May 2010, the following happened to me. I had a heart attack at age 40 that should have killed me. 17 weeks later, I lost my job during the Great Recession. I was across the border from Detroit. The auto sector had to be bailed out by the U.S. government and Canadian government because they were going to go out of business. So imagine GM, Ford, and Chrysler no longer here. Imagine what that would have done. So the government had to bail them out to keep them alive. So needless to say, there was no jobs to be found. So here I am, fresh off of a heart attack, no job. And it took me months to find a new role, which required a relocation to Toronto. So that was several hours away. I grew up in Detroit. I don't like the Maple Leafs. It was, you know, a really, really challenging situation, and still is to this day. And I'm stuck because I still am in Toronto, and I still don't like the Maple Leafs. But, I just don't. I'm sorry. And even though the Wings are not good right now, and they haven't been for a few years, I just can't bring it to myself. It's like, no, it's just against my DNA. I can't. I mean, do I want to? No. But would it be nice to and easier and, you know, I get along more with people around here? Probably. But, you know, I just am not going to do it. So
beautiful.
So here I am, you know, move up to Toronto. I'm working up here for a few weeks. And then I get a phone call from my oldest daughter, who was 10 at the time. And she's crying, and I couldn't understand a thing she was saying. And finally, I was able to get from her that the bank had come and repossessed our family vehicle. When you have a heart attack and you lose your job and you're unemployed, and I know a lot of people have been dealing with this, especially during this pandemic, where we know unemployment does not pay your full salary.
Right.
So here I am, lower income than before, and I'm on heart medication that cost $1,000 a month because I had no drug insurance coverage. You have to make choices. And these are difficult choices for people to make. You know, of course, most people want to pay their bills. They don't want to be behind. No one ever wants that. So, but I had to make a choice. And you know, we worked with our creditors to the best of our ability, but needless to say, the time and the grace period ran out. Because of course, if you remember, during the Great Recession, there was a lot of people that were going through those situations. So the banks only had so much leeway of what they could do. Right. So they exercised the right and they took the car. A few weeks later, finally found a place to move the family into up in Toronto that we could rent. So rented the place, moved up, and we realized that we left the bunk bed ladder for our daughter's bed back at the old house that we were going to list in about a week and list for sale. So I was going back the following weekend to visit with family and friends. And I said, I'll swing by the house and grab that and look around, see if there's anything else we forgot. So I had the visit with the family, went to the house to get the ladder, open up the screen door, and I see the biggest padlock I've ever seen in my life and a small sticker that said foreclosure. So let me recap. In a year, over 369 days, heart attack that should have killed me, job loss during the Great Recession, car repossessed, home foreclosure, all in a year. And all those things happened because I was burned out. That created those scenarios. And it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
Wow. You know, I'm just sitting here thinking about the story because, you know, when I read the story about you in there, I was like going, there's a lot of people right now that are out there listening to the show, and you know, we're in over 80 countries around the world, and burnout, as you point out in this book, it doesn't matter what country you live in, burnout's burnout. Anybody can experience burnout. And that's why I thought the story would be so powerful, because I know that there are people who are listening to the show and going, okay, you know, how do I know I'm in burnout? And you started giving us some clues. So let's start there. I guess maybe we should define burnout first. Why don't we do that? And then help people kind of go, okay, what are some early signs that I should be looking for when it comes to burnout?
Yeah, burnout is defined by the World Health Organization, and we've heard a bit about them over the last couple of years. But prior to the pandemic, they did other things. And one of the things is they had issued what they call an ICD code, and usually they assign those to new diseases or diagnoses and whatnot. They actually issued one for burnout. They didn't classify it as a disease, but they classified it basically as a workplace phenomenon, because globally they are recognizing that burnout is becoming a really big issue. And their definition of burnout, and I'm going to paraphrase it, is it's a state of emotional, physical, and mental exhaustion. And it happens when you're overwhelmed with life, you're not able to meet the demands of life, and you're just completely physically and mentally drained. Now, a lot of people will ask this question. They said, that sounds a lot like depression. Mm. There are a lot of similarities between the two. The biggest difference between depression and burnout is when you're burned out, you typically can still function. You can still get up even though you're wiped out and in a fog and you're just not yourself. You're still able to function a bit, where depression and clinical depression might be the point where you just literally cannot get out of bed. So, but they're very close. And as additional research goes on and studies going on, I'm guessing that they'll probably find some more synergies between the two, which will hopefully help treat some things. But ultimately, as we'll get in deeper into the conversation, burnout is not something that happens overnight. It builds up over time. And there's some warning signs that you can see either in yourself or in loved ones that you can look out for.
Okay. So let's talk about some of the early signs. I mean, you know, because I one thing you do point out in this book, by the way, the book's called Burnout Proof. It's a great book. One of the things you point out here is that there really are like signs along the way, meaning that you have early warning. Well, I called it kind of like this. There's kind of like this light yellow, and then there's the orange, and then there's this red flag. That's kind of how I pulled it out from the book. So let's help folks out there real quickly. What are some like early warning signs that you may be burned out?
A few of the early ones. One is your sleep. If you are having difficulty getting a good night's sleep, and this is something that's newish. I know there are some people that have never slept well, and that's, you know, a little bit different. But if you notice that you're not sleeping as well, that's a definite warning sign, because sleep is so critical for us to be able to fight off the stress of everyday life, because we do damage to ourselves on a daily basis. I don't care how healthy you live, you eat nothing but kale salad and, you know, get all kinds of exercise and all that kind of good stuff. We still do damage to ourselves based on the air we breathe, what we consume, both from an information standpoint and just, you know, foods and everything else. So, and all those things impact your ability to sleep as well. So it's important for you to get really good, consistent sleep night after night, because that way when you're sleeping, your body's repairing the damage we do to ourselves, which means you're more rested, you feel better, you'll be able to deal with the stressful things of life easier. I'm not saying it's going to eliminate stress. I wish that was the case. It doesn't. But how you react to it in your response to stressful situations is definitely improved if you're rested. You know this, if you're
sure
wiped out and you didn't sleep well last night, or maybe you stayed up late because, you know, the game went into extra innings or, you know, or whatnot, and or you got into binge watching something and you realize, oh, wow, it's 3 o'clock and I got to be at the office at 8. Okay, well, you're not going to be fully on your A game that day for sure.
Right.
Well, think about that. If that's consistent over a period of time, then that takes a toll and it starts bringing up other signs such as clarity. You know, you're foggy. If you're making mistakes at work, if you're forgetful, which is, again, these are signs of things that are different than you normally are. Those are some warning signs you can see in yourself or in others. Another one that was a big one in mine was just wasn't motivated to do anything. And I'm not just referring to Monday morning going into work, lack of motivation. That's normal for a lot of people. This is you're not motivated to do anything. I mentioned the baseball ticket situation. I wasn't motivated to go to the game. I love the game of baseball. I have ever since I was 8 years old. Remember, I have actually, it's not the same card, but it is the card from a general store in Luther, Michigan, where my grandparents had a cabin. We walked to the general store and I bought a pack of Topps baseball cards. And the first card I got out of it was Jerry Royce. And at the time he was a pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates. I looked on the back of the card and I saw all these numbers and stats. And I was curious, okay, what are all these? What are these, you know, initials for and all that kind of stuff? And I was able to learn about them and figure out how to calculate batting average, how to calculate ERA. This was, of course, before computers, and I don't think I used a calculator. So, ironically, my first career was accounting. And a lot of that was because of my interest in reading and studying baseball cards and all of that. So it was an interesting thing. So long story short, baseball has been in my blood for forever.
I'm going to stop you right there. I'm going to stop you right there because we're going to take a quick break and commercial break. You're listening, because this is great. We're talking with Michael Levitt, author of, by the way, number one bestselling author of, this book is called Burnout Proof. I'm telling you, it's awesome. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, Epic Physical Therapy, my physical therapists, and a lot of people's physical therapists, including professional athletes. Look, whether recovering from an injury, surgery, suffering everyday aches and pains, having difficulty performing activities of daily living, maybe you are a professional athlete and you're just not doing the things that you need to do. The elite team at Epic Physical Therapy will provide you with a customized treatment plan tailored to your individual needs. They really do understand that they need to treat the entire body as a functional whole, not just your symptoms or your injury. So when you're ready for epic relief, epic recovery, and epic results, don't look any further. Start with Epic Physical Therapy. That's epicpt.com. That's E-P-I-C-P-T.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, for over 35 years, they have been at the top of the real estate game, helping people all over the world sell their home or buy a new one. First-time buyers, second-time home buyers, third-time sellers, it doesn't matter. She's helped them all. And why is she able to do that? It's because she has created these relationships over 35 years, and nothing has changed except that her customer service and customer experience just keeps getting better and better and better. She understands how to take care of her clients and understands their needs and wants when it comes to real estate. So when you want to start your real estate journey, start with Linda Kraft and Team Realtors. You can learn more by going to lindacraft.com. That's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Michael Levitt, Burnout Proof. We're talking about actually some of the early warning signs of burnout. And Michael gave us the first one he gave us coming out of the blocks was fatigue. And then the second one he gave us was lack of motivation. And he was talking about how his love for baseball was one of the things from the time he was a child. And by the way, I know about Topps baseball cards because I still have 22,000 of them. And I think Eddie Brinkman, right, shortstop for Detroit, was one of the first cards I opened in my first pack of Topps. I think it was Eddie Brinkman.
Yep, there you go.
So back in 1974, I think is what it was. And Mark Fidrich was a pitcher.
The Bird.
Yeah, and then I think Mickey Lolich was still pitching for the Tigers then too. So we've got you're tired, and now we've got motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the next one, and this was one that, you know, my family would share with me afterwards. And it was definitely should have been, this is the red side of things.
Okay.
Was I was irritable. I was short fused, argumentative, just not a nice person to be around. And that's not my demeanor.
I can't imagine. Yeah. Cause I mean, you're about as nice a guy. You're about as nice and gentle of a man as I know. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, I was not a good person to be around, and it was because I was fighting all of this fatigue and being overwhelmed and just not taking care of myself, and it all came to, again, that crashing halt in May of 2009, and that was definitely a sign. So if you notice somebody that is, you know, a little more short-fused than they normally are, or if they're, you know, like, good demeanor and they're really, really rude for some reason, that's definitely a warning sign to be on the lookout for, because if they're holding in, you know, all the strain and the stress and everything else and not doing anything to relieve it.
There was a lot that you gave us, by the way. He's got a list of these and at these warning signs, in his introduction. He talks about those and what contributes to it, and we're going to get to those. But one of the ones I want to really focus in on, because I think this certainly happened to me in a previous career, is the isolation.
Yeah, when you are an executive or the only one in your organization, there's definitely a lot for isolation. You feel alone, even though you're not, even though you could belong to a peer group, which I did, you know, I had mentors and all of that, but you still feel like you're taking on the world yourself. And as a entrepreneur, a solopreneur, you know, the owner of a business, you do too much. You take too much on. You don't delegate. I was horrible at delegation. Horrible. I would not delegate anything because I was too concerned that I would overwhelm my employees because they were busy. So what did I do? I overwhelmed myself. That's not smart. And of course, I know that now, but I didn't then. And now, you know, if you talk to my last assistant before I launched my business, I was a healthcare executive. I went back into healthcare after this. My parents wanted to have me committed. They're like, what in the world are you doing?
Right.
It's like that role nearly killed you. What are you doing? I said, right. I'm going to do it better this time. And I did. And I was successful. You know, had government agency, you know, fund a complete diploma program for me, all kinds of fun stuff. It was great. And I turned around teams. I sat on government boards to redesign healthcare, all the fun stuff. So I was enjoying myself and had a good time with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I learned how to delegate. And my assistant, you know, she would confirm this. Instead of me taking on things, doing things, anytime anything landed on my desk or in my inbox, I would look and go, okay, who besides me could work on this? And if somebody came to mind, congratulations, they're going to get it, with a caveat. And the last thing I wanted to do was burn out one of my teammates or one of my employees.
Right.
So I knew what I had delegated and kept tabs on everything. So that way I know I can't give it to them because they're already working on these other things. So it's going to have to wait, or we're not going to do it. And that takes time, and it's a trial and error initially. But once you get a system in place, it does become easier.
So let me ask you this, because I'm sure that the listeners are chomping at the bit going, well, is it a profession thing? Are there some professions more prone to burnout than others?
Based on the number of talks that I've given over the last 2 years, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
There are some industries that definitely have the likelihood of burnout happening more often than not. Healthcare is definitely one of those. Legal is another. Education is a field. Anywhere where you are working longer than normal hours for a long period of time with just an insurmountable amount of work, can definitely create some burnout challenges and opportunities. Because, again, especially if you're in an industry, let's say, that is short-staffed, And after the Great Recession, there were a lot of organizations that unfortunately didn't bring people back. They were still able to do what they needed to do with the staff that remained. And unfortunately, the workloads in many of those sectors have increased, but they didn't bring back people. So the workloads are getting more and more. Finance is another area as well that you see a lot. You see a lot of investment people, especially the younger generations are bringing awareness to this, you know, where we're seeing a lot of the big, you know, Wall Street type entities where a lot of the brokers are saying, look, I cannot work that many hours. We got to do something about it. So conversation is happening, which is good. Now, the next step is, you know, making some adjustments and figuring out a way to better harmonize workloads with the resources that we have.
You also talk about some personality traits that can lead to burnout. One of the big ones, and I really think this is huge, is people pleasers.
Yes.
So, because, and you're familiar with being a people pleaser. I mean,
I identify as my name is Mike and I am a reformed people pleaser. Hi, Mike.
Hi, yeah. Mike. Yeah. Recovering people pleaser. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. So talk about why people pleasing plays such a role in burnout.
Well, what happens is, and I had this conversation with my mom because she's where I inherited that from. I don't know if it's genetic or not. I wouldn't be shocked if it is, because personality traits and things like that, I think, get carried through in DNA. And for years, you know, mom would literally, you know, and I use this phrase, she'd cut off her own foot to give somebody her shoes. And I'm like, Mom, you need those shoes. Well, they need them. Yeah, but so do you. But when you're a people pleaser, you completely delegate your own well-being to help others. And you see it in nonprofit. You see it in the you know, caring industries. You see it in missionary work. You see it in churches. You see where, you know, they sacrifice and give. And that's there's nothing wrong with giving.
Right.
It makes the world a much better place. The phrase is better to give and receive. I completely believe that. I love to be able to give. But it shouldn't be to your own detriment, because then you're just watering down you and making life harder on you than it needs to be. And I always tell people, it's like, yeah, some people may, especially if you go from being a people pleaser to not being one,
right?
That can be an interesting conversation, because all of a sudden the people that have been used to that and expecting that, all of a sudden they're not getting that. And it's going to be, it might be a little dicey depending on what the situation is. Right. But I always tell people, it's like, look, if you take care of yourself, as selfish as that may sound,
right,
when you do give, they're getting a much better version of you than they were before. Mm. You're giving them better than you would have before, because you were empty when you were trying to give them something. And it was definitely a really big humble pie that I had to eat. Actually, I went for a few servings of it just to kind of, you know, take stock. And, you know, it takes time. You know, it's not going to be an overnight thing. Just like, you know, the example you gave about exercising, it's like if somebody that, you know, it's like, I'll go walk, you know, I said, well, walk around, you know, the block. I tell people, don't even walk around the block. Walk out off your front porch or wherever you live in, right, and walk to the sidewalk.
Right.
And then you can stop and go back in. Now, a lot of people say, that's silly. I said, that's barely walking. I said, well, then walk a little bit further, walk where you feel comfortable, then turn around. You'll think, I can do more. Okay. Well, then, you know, don't push yourself, but, you know, stretch yourself a little bit.
Right.
And you know, it's the same thing with, you know, becoming a reformed people pleaser. It's just understanding what your motivation is for doing it. Okay. Well, are you trying to get ego? Like in my work where I burned out, I was trying to be such a pillar to the community. I wanted that clinic to be the best. I wanted people to be healthy. Here I am not taking care of myself and eating fast food and not exercising and working long hours. No, we want you to be healthier. And why don't you start with yourself there, Bob, you know? And And I should have, you know, but I completely ignored the signs. I was so tunnel visioned on things that it ended up, you know, nearly costing me my life, obviously. And it cost me a whole lot more. But again, when you're a people pleaser and you are trying to not be one, you know, it takes some time and effort, and recommend, you know, working with a therapist or study some books on it just to kind of learn. But definitely be graceful to yourself, please. Don't beat yourself up. That's the last thing anybody needs, is beating yourself up. It's like, understand, this is why I did this. Okay. Yeah. Do I want to continue doing that? No. Okay. Well, what do I need to do to stop that particular behavior or choice or belief, and ease into it? And then it'll be more sustainable once you get to the other side.
I think it's interesting because, you know, people pleasers believe that, you know, they're really helping. But, you know, the truth is that when we recover from people pleasing and we actually start really helping people, we actually have an authentic version of helping. It's not based on, well, I have this dysfunctional need to help. It is, I'm helping because I know I can help.
Right.
It's a way different and more authentic, altruistic view than actual people pleasing, because nobody's special, because you people please everybody. Mm. And but when we recover from that and we get on the other side of that, then, you know, we pick and choose how we're going to help, because we're picking and choosing what, first of all, what we're good at helping at. And then second, we're giving our best at that point. So it's really kind of this odd dynamic, isn't it? That when we people please, we're trying to please everybody. We end up really pleasing no one. We certainly don't please ourselves. But then when we start recovering and get on the other side of that dysfunction, now we become actually far more helpful.
More helpful and working in the areas, like you said, that we're good at. And
right.
With causes or with people that, you know, need the help. You know, as a parent, right. I, you know, nothing would make me happier than to help out all of my kids, you know, prevent them from falling down, prevent any boo-boos, prevent any missteps, all of that. But you know what? That's how life gets interesting. Mm-hmm. Falling down on your face, while not pleasant, sometimes is a pretty valuable lesson, because you realize, okay, that wasn't the right decision for me to do that. Right. Me going through that wonderful year that I had, that was a life changer for me, and a lifesaver, quite frankly, because if I didn't make the adjustments afterward and I just thought, you know what, I survived all that, I'm Superman, even though I like Batman better than Superman, but here I am, invincible, you know, kryptonite didn't even get me. It's like, no, I realized, okay, that should have killed me. It didn't. All right. Well,
right.
What am I going to do with this? Right. And I took the long, hard road to figure out who I was and who I wanted to be, and connected the dots.
You make a statement in the end of chapter one that is, you even admit, is not a very popular one. And you say, and I quote, "Burnout is a choice." Now, there are people who are going to listen to that going, "Michael, no, Michael, it's not. That just happened." Let's first of all, you know, back away from the knob that you're about to turn off, or your phone. Okay, let's ease up. So help us understand, burnout is a choice.
Yeah, that one, when I'm on stage, I'm always making sure that there's no tomatoes that are at the conference center. I try to go early in the breakfast, at least that way, if they're throwing eggs or bacon, because my logo is an egg, I'll at least, if it hits me, I'll pick it off. If it's on the floor, I won't, obviously. But
we have 3-second rule, man.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but if it's after lunch, you know, there's salad, there's going to be the little tiny tomatoes. Right. Those, you can actually throw those farther. So I try not to, you know, give that portion of the talk if I'm going to be doing after lunch talk. Burnout is a choice. The choices you make in life, which go to, I need to have this car payment, or I need to have this car, I need to live in this house, I need the white picket fence, I need to work in this community, I need to work in this job, I have to do this because I have to do this. Okay. Those are all choices. But what happens is if those choices collectively put you into any type of emotional, physical, financial, or other types of strain or problems, then you're running with scissors in many ways, because an economic downturn or a health incident or a variety of other things can topple that deck of cards really fast. So you got to choose wisely. You know, like, okay, why do I feel that I need to have this car? Okay, why is this important?
Right.
Why do I need to live in this type of house or this type of community or work in only this job or this sector?
Right.
Because there are people that do that. They think, I can only do this. As somebody that has worked in a variety of different careers and worked in a lot of different industries, I will tell you there are more commonalities than differences. You can learn whatever you want. I know somebody that worked for the auto sector, assembly line worker. They are now a registered nurse because, you know, they lost their job during the Great Recession. So they learned, they went from plugging in parts into car doors to giving people immunizations and doing all the things that nurses get to do. And completely different skill set.
Right.
Although, you know, dealing with some jerks on the assembly line probably helped with jerk patients and jerk doctors. Not that they exist. Side joke there.
Side joke.
But yeah. at the end of the day, she took the initiative to learn a new skill in a new career that should be something that she can retire from. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things. Your choices can set you up for success, or they can set you up for having stress, and prolonged stress turns into burnout. You don't wake up and go, oh, I woke up, I'm burned out. It's prolonged stress.
His name is Michael Levitt. The book is called Burnout Proof, How to Establish Boundaries to Avoid the Negativity of Stress. By the way, did I tell you he was that good? Oh yeah, he's better than advertised, isn't he? Awesome. I'm going to tell you what, you're going to love the book. You're going to love him. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Folks, Epic Physical Therapy, my physical therapist, their facilities, they have more than one. They offer the top of the line, most advanced equipment, including things like the Ultra G anti-gravity treadmill, the Normatec compression sleeves, the Game Ready, which I rave about, of ice and compression. They are trained and certified in the most comprehensive cutting edge treatments available, like blood flow restriction therapy, dry needling, cupping, and that's just a few. Right. I mean, there's tons of things. So listen, it doesn't matter why you're going there. It could be for a variety of reasons, but go where the professionals go. Go to Epic Physical Therapy. That's where you're going to get your epic relief, your epic recovery, and your epic results. You can learn more by going to epicpt.com. That's EPICPT.com. And Linda Kraft and Team Realtors, you know, she has a team, and her team is a reflection of her. She has been doing real estate literally for more than 35 years. She doesn't look it, by the way. Doesn't look at it at all. But she stays at the top of her game. Why? How does she do it? Well, one of the things she does, she stays on the top of, is she calls it the bleeding edge of technology, right? And it's not just the cutting edge, it's the bleeding edge, right? She understands that as times have changed, so does real estate. And so she stays on that bleeding edge of technology. But what she hasn't lost is, with all that technology, is how to connect and how to relate to her clients. And when you combine those two things, you have something really, really powerful. And that's what Linda Kraft and Team Realtors has. So when you're ready to sell or buy your home, start with the professionals, the matchmakers of real estate, the relationship maintainers, and start, listen, and creators, start with Linda Kraft Team Realtors. Just go to lindacraft.com. It's LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Michael Levitt, the book, Burnout Proof. Man, this is so good. Michael, you are really, really good, man. I understand why people should be hiring to speak. And folks, and I know I've got a lot of you all over the world who are hire speakers. Do you understand why you need to hire him? Yeah, you should. You should be hiring him right away. One of the things that you talk about is, when it comes to burnout, is when your core values differ from your workplace. And I don't think we talk about that nearly enough, but it that is a really big issue, isn't it?
It is. And you know, in going back to the organization that I was working with when I had my cardiac event, obviously the leadership was, you know, their values were different than mine when it came to work-life balance, although balance doesn't really exist. It's more like work-life harmony. But they were very, very driven and, you know, and wanting to get the most out of me and everything else because they had their own desires for what they wanted that clinic to do. Community pillars, they wanted a stamp on it and to, you know, be proud of, you know, what they brought to the community type of thing where ego can kind of get into play. I'm not blaming them for what happened to me. It was all self-induced. Right. Right. But at the end of the day, there was a bit of a misalignment. And what we're seeing, especially now, and you read about it, where some of the younger generations are focusing more on, okay, what's the values of the organization that I'm working for? What are they doing? What's their, you know, even carbon footprint, and you know, what are they doing to the world, and what are they doing for the community, and all of that stuff. Right. Where before, a lot of us are like, "What are you going to pay me? What kind of bennies do we get?" You know, you know, where's the, you know, what's the cafeteria like? Is the coffee decent? You know, we were fairly simplistic as far as our needs. You know, we were some people could say Neanderthalish in a way compared to that, but to our own detriment maybe, because we didn't do that due diligence of, okay, what is this organization about? How do they treat their employees? How do they treat their customers?
Right.
Is it the same company? Because I've seen many companies that this is the face that they put on for their customers, but behind the veil is something completely different. You want it to be the same organization. And it's important for people to understand what those values are. Yes, there may be busy seasons. You know, again, my first career was public accounting, and so that means tax season. So, you know, from end of January to April 15th, you know, those were some long hours. I knew that. I was prepared for that. I worked it. Believe me, nothing smells or sounds better than spring air and birds chirping on April 16th. It's a beautiful feeling. Even to this day, I still, it's like, oh, what a great day. And I'm like, I haven't been in that role in long, long time, but still it's, you know, it was built into me. I was like, okay, great. I can be free again. But if that's all the time, if you're constantly being worked and they're saying, okay, yeah, we're going to bring on additional help. And they've been saying that every year in your annual review, when you actually get to talk to management, that's concerning. And again, that goes back into the burnout as a choice situation. Sometimes our decisions and our choices kind of landlock us a bit. Like, right. Okay, I have to keep this job in order to make this mortgage payment. Well, then you call Linda and you find a house that's a little bit more affordable for you. It's, you know, that's a free one, Linda. Yeah, real quick, one of the industries that was burning out quite a bit during this pandemic is the mortgage brokers, because so many people were moving and the mortgage brokers were just slammed with work. But back to our story. Ultimately, it's like, understand what the core values of the organization is, and hopefully all the employees help design what those core values are and they live them and breathe them. And it's not just a poster on the boardroom wall. It's something that is, you know, natural that people can all say and see and feel. Right. And if it's not, then you have a choice. There's plenty of opportunities. It may not be the best one for you. And you know, my situation, you know, after finding new role, I took a step back and kind of recalibrated, and then, you know, went on and escalated from there. Kind of like a stock, you know, stocks don't go straight up or straight down. They kind of zigzag a little bit. The same thing with my career. You know, I took it and like, okay, let's take a step back, find something that's right for me at this point in time, and then proceed accordingly.
You know, this is the thing though, you know, I interview a lot of people on this show, business people, about, you know, talking about your values and everything, about, you know, the company core values and what they are and everything like that. But we rarely talk about, from an employee's perspective, do your values or do what you value really align well with the company? And then what decisions are you going to make because of that? Because I think, you know, we go into the interview process. I think there's still part of that, you know, we called it the Neanderthal era, you know, of how much money are you going to pay me? What are the, you know, bennies, you know, and is the coffee taste okay? But I mean, I think there is still part of people who go, I just need the job. So then they're willing to sacrifice their own core beliefs, even though, or they don't even research the core of the company. They just want to get a paycheck so bad. And, you know, you talk about, you know, working, there's a book out there, I think it's called Dying for a Paycheck that you talk about in the book. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we look at it that way. I think we always look at it from the business and the core values, but it's so equally important of you looking at your own values, knowing what those are, and making sure you're in alignment with whatever company you're going to get, because at the end of the day, it comes back to what we talked about right after the break. And that is, you know what? You're ultimately responsible for that decision. So your decision chooses burnout.
Yep. Your choices can lead to burnout. Yeah. And that's, again, there's no excuse for people to not know what a company is about, because right. You can go online and research. Yes, you can look at job reviews, you know, of disgruntled ex-employees and take that for, you know, if there's a bunch of them, then maybe dig a little deeper. Right. You know, if there's only a couple, then, you know, maybe it was just not the right fit for that person. Right. But, you know, do your own due diligence. Ask the questions during the interview process. And again, make sure that all the needs that you have
right. you
know, are taken care of. You know, do you have flexible schedule now with right. you know, this COVID-19? Is there remote work available? Is it hybrid? What is it? You know, those right. are new things that have been introduced into the mix over the last year and a half. And going forward, that's going to be a big deal for a lot of people, especially if they've grown accustomed to working remotely a little bit more. They right. want that flexibility. And it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see how employees and employers go about all this. Because one thing that this pandemic did create is I think a lot of people took a step back and started reflecting on what was important to them, which was so, so crucially critical for everybody involved. It's like, okay, what's important to me?
Right.
And then proceed accordingly with where you work, what you do for fun, adventure, and all of that kind of good stuff. So a lot of people refer to this as the Great Reset. And I think for many people and organizations, that's exactly what they've done. It's like, let's take a look and take stock of where we are right now. And if there's areas that we aren't happy with, okay, let's make some adjustments so we are happy.
So we got a few minutes left. And so how do we prevent... What are some things we can do to prevent burnout in the next couple minutes?
Get restful sleep. Instead of spending big money on that 95-inch television, go buy the best mattress you can afford. Just think about it. Where do you spend the most consecutive hours of your day in one spot? It's where you sleep. Wow. It's your bed.
Wow.
Spend that money, whether it's a firm mattress or soft mattress. If your partner has a different opinion on it, then, you know, get one that can be both. Yes, they're not cheap, but you know what? You're going to get good sleep. If you get good sleep, it has a positive domino effect. One thing, too, that I did, and I did this recently. I wish I would have done it a lot sooner, but I got a food intolerance test because – you know, I know I have some intolerances and some food allergies, and I paid for this test, and it was tested on 255 different foods and got the results back. And I was shocked on some things that I have a pretty significant intolerance to. And why that's so important is it may not be an allergy, but it's an intolerance. And what happens is that means your gut bacteria in your gut has a difficult time processing that food. And your gut tends to be active while you sleep. So eliminating some of those foods that were bothering me allows my gut to process things that my body doesn't mind, which means it's not using as much energy, which means my body can use those resources to address other areas while I'm sleeping, which means my sleep is actually improved. And my sleep was pretty decent before. So now it's that. I mean, it's, there's plenty of places to get those things, but it's a really good eye-opening thing to go, wow, I didn't realize that was... intolerance. That's a big thing. And then finally, getting more active. Now, I'm not going to tell you to go become a gym rat unless you want to, then go for it. But if you're not active, start, because that helps you, your body, with, you know, building up some muscle mass and things like that, and just getting leaner means your body doesn't have to use the energy to deal with all the extra weight and strain. And that means your body can fight off stress easier, so it doesn't stick to you, so it doesn't get prolonged, because prolonged stress turns into burnout. If you don't have prolonged stress, you won't burn out.
Yeah, that's awesome. Listen, the book's great. Again, it's called Burnout Proof, available bookstores everywhere, Amazon for sure. And like I said, it's not a long book. It is a get-to-the-point book. It's absolutely a book that you should read. And folks, be on the lookout. This is kind of, you know, Michael talks about it. This is kind of one of those books where you need to be on the lookout for, not just for yourself, and you should. You need to put on your mask first. He talks about that, but also look out for other people around you. The book's great. Michael, thank you so much for being on the show. Absolutely fantastic. Stay with me. Folks, that's the show. Listen, I say this to you every week, right? You're in control of two things in your life, your attitude and your effort. It doesn't matter what's going on around you. You have control of those two things, so take control of them right now. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest. It's going to be another great book. It's going to be another great show. And as I say to my friends in Italy, ciao, everyone. A new direction.